Hey everyone, I'm Dahlia.
And I'm Alma. This is Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast.
Okay, so today we are going to be discussing Pet Sematary, the 1989 version.
Original. I asked and I should have known because we've been highlighting women in horror. So this has a director, Mary Lambert, who is a woman. Did I describe that like really weird or what?
You did. I think you did. This has a director who is a woman director who is going by the name of Mary Lambert, this woman director.
No, just kidding. I'm not human yet this morning. I've been awake forever, but it always takes me so long to be like peak brain. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
I had my coffee. I always say like I need 2 or 3 hours of like functioning time. And I have been. I've been running around cleaning. I've already did my coffee time. You know, I was organizing shit. I was pulling up. I'm trying to clean out a closet. So it's like I have been awake, but I don't think I've used my brain yet until now. So special.
I totally feel you because most mornings I'm up really early. And like, even if like right before work, I always have this rule that I have to be up at least 2 hours before I have to be functional. So like before work, like if it was a day shift, I have to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning. If it's a night shift, I have to be up by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I think I said that right. But either way, I have these times that I know it takes me a while to be coherent and to actually get shit done. Now, can I wake up in a start all startled and like get shit done? Yeah. But I'm going to feel off the rest of the day. So I like to ease into my day.
Yeah. I like those people who can just get up. They're like, I need this amount of time. I'm going to wake up at exactly this time. Not me.
Nope.
I'm like, it could be something in the afternoon that I got to be dressed for and I'm still going to be running behind. So, and kind of feeling like a zombie, much like in the movie that we're discussing today.
I was going to mention real quick that we're talking about Mary Lambert. That's why Women of Horror. Mary Lambert directed this movie and its sequel. And I see also Halloween Town 2.
I put that there because I love Halloween Town.
Okay, I don't think I ever saw that. Urban Legends, Bloody Mary. Mm-hmm. Mega Python versus Gatoroid.
Yeah, you ever seen that one? It was a sci-fi one. Yeah, it was good. It was funny. Yeah, and then, I love those.
And then what got her kind of attention for this, I believe, is if I read it correctly, was she had done a whole bunch of music videos, including some for Madonna, Material Girl, Like a Prayer, Like a Virgin, and Janet Jackson's Nasty.
Nasty. So, I'm not going to sing it. I know it, but I wouldn't be able to bring it
in. I'm singing it in my head. I would fuck it up big time.
I was a little kid doing it. Nasty. Nasty girl.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you know, inappropriate. Yes. But, you know, I didn't do the whole dance. Okay. I just did like a little clip. So you didn't hear about Halloween Town because that's a kid's movie, Dahlia. Halloween Town and Halloween 2.
Here's the thing. I wanted to make sure it was because I have heard of Halloween Town. I didn't watch them, but when I saw it here, I wanted to make sure that it was that one, the kids one, because I was trying to say there was an adult version. Like I'm talking like about a like porn. I'm not talking.
It's a
I just
porn.
Mean like a mature.
Halloween
even saying
Town.
Mature makes it sound bad. Halloween. Weenie Town. What? Okay, I'm sorry. No, we're talking about the kids movie, and I think I remember one of the actresses in it, but no, I never saw them. I avoid kids shows.
I love
sorry.
Them. I That's love them. Me. I just watched Lyle the Crocodile or Lyle the Crocodile. I don't know. It was great. I was like, this is good. I was like, why haven't I never seen this?
It's funny because I keep wondering why, what platform is it on? I forget because it keeps recommending it for me. I'm like, why the fuck are you trying to get me to watch this Lyle shit? I'm not going to watch it. Just leave me alone. I'm sure it's good. It's just not my cup of tea.
No, I love kids shit too. It's weird because I'm like the movie types that I like love horror. And then I'll back it up and watch, like I was watching Finding Dory this morning. And it's just, I love. Kid movies and horror are my main, like, types of movies that I'm going to watch, which is so weird, right? It's, like, just two different things. I really, like, is it something for kids or is it horror? Okay, those are the only
ones I'm going to watch. One softens your soul, one hardens it. Yeah, I think they both soften it.
So this one is the 1989 version, and it was written by Stephen King, of course, but he also wrote the screenplay for it, and Mary Lambert directed it. We have Dale Midkiff as Dr. Lewis Creed, Denise Crosby as Rachel Creed, his wife, Fred Gwynn as Judd Crandall, the neighbor, we all know him, Brad Greenquist as Victor Pascal, and you know, until I looked at his name really good, I had always called that character, even though I read the little story a long time ago, Pascal, and it was Pascal the whole time, like a cow.
You added the L at the end? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, uh-huh. Miko Hughes as Gage, Blaise Bertall as Ellie, and Susan Blummer as Missy Dandridge, who is the nurse in the movie.
Okay, so you have little bits of trivia here to share with us. Enlighten us.
Okay, so Paramount executives wanted a pair of twins to play the role of Gage, like those chosen to play Ellie, which was the most cost-effective option. However, Lambert was very impressed with 3-year-old Miko Hughes, and I think we all agree with that one. He was a natural talent despite his young age, so she lobbied the studio to accept her choice. They used a stand-in. There was another younger boy that they used in a stand-in in one of the scenes in the movie, the kite scene, but they really worked with him because he was just very good. So she also faced resistance from executives over her choice to cast Fred Gwynn, whom the studio believed audiences would not take seriously because his fame is Herman Munster.
And I love him as Herman Munster. And I think it was a perfect way to take him seriously because on the Munsters, there was just something about him that you respected. And even though he was goofy, it still comes across like it doesn't come across as goofy in a bad way. It comes off like fun. But yet again, like I said, you still respect him. And in this movie, I think he's a nice way of softening what's kind of going on in the kind of chaotic mess that's happening to the family. I don't know, including the ending.
Yeah, but I totally did not have any, I thought he did the role perfectly. So it's great that she did it because that's who we see as that character. We hear his voice and he did an outstanding job. So also the twin actresses, because I brought that up, there are twin actresses playing Ellie, the daughter. Blaise Bertall, however, was mainly credited for the role, while her sister, Bo Bertall, now Oliver, is credited as Ellie Creed II. And I think it was just like based on who could do what. And I mean, I read some things about, you know, like the crying, one of them couldn't. But what's funny is I read a little thing that said for a crying scene, Mary Lambert paid the little girl more money because she couldn't get real tears to come out. And when she told her, I'll give you more money or a certain amount of money, the little girl, boom, she cried insta tears.
So I'm always convinced they go around pinching these babies and kids to make them cry. Like, how do they cry so well? In the background. They're doing it. I know they are. No, I'm just kidding.
And I know we'll get to the part of Zelda, the sister, because the sister, you know, one of the creepiest scenes that gave me nightmares when I was a kid was the sister Zelda, who had been dying from, I think it was spinal meningitis, is supposed to be a teen girl. But when she was casting, she didn't think that a teenager or a small child could really pull across that creepy vibe that she really wanted. So she found a man to play that role, played by Andrew Hubacek, who played that role to give us the most intensely creepy I mean, who wouldn't get traumatized by that? That poor sister scene. Ooh, that was so scary.
It was
and sad.
Intense. Yeah.
That storytelling within the movie. I love a good story, and I really like that scene in the movie. All right.
Okay, so I muted myself and I didn't come off it quick enough. Sorry about that. Okay, so this was on Paramount Plus and also on Amazon Prime. I don't remember which one I watched it on, but you know what? I do remember. It was on Amazon Prime because I was going to try to get you to do a watch party with me, but I can't figure out how to fucking do the watch party.
I'll look it up.
We'll have to figure it out.
I keep seeing that as an option, and I know we did it before.
I kept clicking it, and to test it out, I kept clicking it. It says, you have to have this. And I'm like, or you have to be on Amazon Prime. I'm like, I am on motherfucking Prime here. What the fuck is going on?
I like this argument that you're having with Prime.
I am.
Because I can
was.
See you sitting there
fighting.
Looking at it doing that. I used Paramount Plus because we have a subscription. And I'm like, I'm paying for this shit. See, I had a fight too. And I'm like, I'm going to use it. So if I find it on one of the ones that's not, you know, I'll totally watch it on that. Okay. So
quick short summary about, in case you haven't watched it, or I'm sure most of you, even if you haven't watched it, have heard of it. But after tragedy strikes, a grieving father discovers an ancient burial ground behind his home with the power to raise the dead. And there is a trigger warning for suicide and child death in this movie. Some of the taglines for this movie are, sometimes dead is better. And that's, I think, one of the more famous ones that I've ever heard.
I love that one.
Yeah. I don't know. Is this really it? A magical place where a child's best friend can come back and live forever as an adult's worst nightmare. And if it works for animals, was that really a tagline? That's really fucking long.
I love finding the ones that are kind of like bizarre, too long, or like who used that as a tagline? You know what I mean? So whenever I look at the taglines, I'll notice the best ones and then the worst ones, which is why I wrote that one down.
And this last one sounds like it's a fucking sick burn. Don't forget to put out the cat before the cat puts out you.
You.
I love that. That reminds me of how the little kid says, you. Wait, how does he say it? Yeah. In the, oh, man, I wish I fucked it up. But the way he says, want to play or something like that, he says you or me in a really cute, elongated way.
Oh,
it's so adorable
yeah.
in the movie.
It's so adorable.
This little boy
and
is adorable.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Yes, he was
adorable.
So cute. Okay, so first of all, it's like, I love it because he's like an actual baby and he's just like doing baby shit. And I think the only words in the beginning that he knows how to, he's saying is the name of the cat, Church. And he's like saying Church, Church. And he's walking around in the tiny diaper. And I'm all for kids in movies, if it's a creepy movie, if they're a creepy kid. But I love a really cute fucking kid. And he was like the star of the beginning. I just kept watching him like, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Oh man. I think it was a superb choice to pick.
Oh yeah.
This kid. Like how?
Yeah. He did it
how
perfectly.
How do you get them to be creepy and say things and do things and walk around kind of like that with the, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the movie starts off with them, the family, the doctor and his wife, and they have two kids and their cat Church, and they move to a beautiful little suburban home with the worst fucking road in front of them.
Well, okay. So here's the thing. It's shot on location in a rural Maine area, and we'll get more into that later. But rural is the one thing we want to with this road, it's like one of those two-lane highways going in front of the house. And why is it such a thing in movies where one or both parties of a couple, when they first move to a place, one of them at least has never been there before? It's like, how is that a thing? How is it a thing where he's like, so what do you think? She's looking around, taking it in for the first time. How did she never get a chance to look at it? And how did he not think that road was going to be a problem? See, if she had come to look at the house beforehand, she would have been like, fuck no. Look at that road right there. We're not moving here with that fucking road with all those fucking semis driving by. This ain't happening. But
yeah.
It did happen because he went and all he thought was, oh, look at the house.
Look at the nice house. Details, stupid. I was dying to just say, I said the same thing. all the movies where anybody moves in and they've never actually been there physically. Are you really buying homes without ever stepping foot in the home or checking out in the area?
It's See, like now these days- today, in today's market, yes, because people are fighting over houses right now. I personally have to visit, but right now people are doing it. But this is extreme circumstances. This is fucking 1989. No one was going to buy that fucking house. She had time to go and fucking look at it is all I'm saying. But anyway, so she's looking at it and taking it in for the first time. They see that fucking road in front of them. It's a road, but it's a fucking highway. Looking how fast those fucking cars are going by. And this is when we first meet Mr. Munster next door. I forget his name. What is the
Judd
name? Judd. So Judd basically says, like, is this the part two where Judd saves the little boy already?
Yes, already. Because already. They also turned their backs on the little tiny kid. And it's like, that's your only job, man. Both of them are just like, we're checking out the house. They saw the road. They already heard the commotion of a car driving by. And yet they commented back- on
it, everything. Mm-hmm. So that did aggravate me that they never seen it. Okay, so why are they there? They moved there because he took on a job as a physician, and they befriend their new neighbor. Oh, Judd Crandall. That's right. Because I remember when I was little and I would hear his name, I thought they were saying Judge. That's what I thought when I was little, that he was a judge. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. He looks like a judge. Then we're going to start learning about the pet cemetery behind them, purposefully misspelled, you know, instead of C-E-M-E-S-E-M-A. Did I spell that right? I already confused how the, but either way, it's purposefully misspelled.
They misspelled it, yeah, because kids wrote it.
Yeah.
And it makes sense more better that way.
Yeah, it does
It's
make
also
sense.
Creepier if you imagine a child scraping pet cemetery into a wooden plank and hanging it up in the dark. So yeah, he's already giving them clues about the pet cemetery. I think that he never needed to do that. I don't think they would have ever discovered this pet cemetery if it hadn't been for him telling them about them.
Oh yeah.
It's like he gives them all the information that they need to know about that cemetery. And the relationship between them in the beginning, I kind of thought like the husband was like, and the wife, when they had that squabble in the kitchen about if the cat dies, it's going to be your fault and you're going to have to tell her. I was like, why are we starting off so serious?
And the little girl so quickly, like, we started talking about like her cat dying. But of course, we end up seeing because she has, I don't know what you call them, but premonition dreams or whatever. She's having dreams that are prophetic, I guess, that are going to turn out to be true. But anyway, so he's at his new job. I'm guessing he's a ER doctor, whatever, because the things he's encountering, and there is a patient, Victor Pascal, who was a jogger that was hit by a truck and he passes away, and he ends up being an integral part of this movie because he feels like the dead jogger, that is, feels like the doctor did try to save him. So he's trying to save him throughout the movie. Of course, you know, we learn that everything turns out wrong anyways. You didn't need no dead jogger to try to help you out because everything gets fucked up.
Yeah, I was like, no matter what, I think everything was messed up from the beginning. Pascal is our zombie ghost for the whole rest of the movie. I call him like zombie ghost when they're not just a ghost because he does kind of like start to look deader and deader. American Werewolf in London.
American Werewolf in London does that so
that
well.
That's the best one, though.
Yeah. Oh, we should talk. Have we talked about that yet?
Yeah, I think we have that one. I think we did a live watch of that one.
Oh, we did. Okay, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. I remember it got messed up, the saving edit of it or something like that. It was kind of weird. But anyways, I guess apparently the actor, when he would walk around with the makeup, it was just looked so good that people were like, didn't want to be near him, like, or eat near him because it just looked a little too real in person. So I thought that's kind of cool. That's a good testament or testimonial to someone's work that your makeup is grossing people out and they can't eat around it.
I know. And the fact that he had to eat with the makeup on too, with like his brain exposed just sitting there. So does someone have a picture of this dude eating his sandwich or just
oh my
like
God.
Sitting
I
back
bet
with
they
a
do.
Coke?
I bet they do. They have to. Okay, so Pascal, like we said, warns him about the pet cemetery. I always thought about the word that they use about, because it didn't start off as like an evil cemetery. It started off, I guess, the way it was intended. Then it kind of involves some kind. I always hate using these terms. This is so outdated, but like quote unquote Indian burial ground. This is one thing I kind of have a problem with. Not kind of, I have a problem with. But it was a recurring theme. It was a recurring theme that Indian burial grounds turned out evil if like something is like it's. I think it was of its time. It still doesn't make it right, but unfortunately, that's what we're talking about. I still think the movie and the book are good if you look at them out of context of that whole Indian burial ground. Rather, just look at it as like, hopefully, if you can't watch it, that's fine. But the ground soured. That's the term they always use. Anyways, all of that babbling was to get to the point that I was talking about the ground souring. So when I was little, I thought they literally meant that the ground tasted sour. Like for some reason, they were going around tasting the and that's like, oh yeah, sour would be bad. It's just like the ground. I get it now, but it's just so funny. Every time I hear the word that the ground went sour, it always just puts a different connotation on it for me. Like I'm a fucking
I always
10-year-old
thought that
old or
they
something.
thought of it like as land, as in being something that you could be used to, something you can use. And therefore, when you bury people there, the earth is no good for planting. And so I guess I took
Exactly.
it
That's
very
what it is. That's what,
literal.
yeah, that's what it is. I mean, that's what it is. I'm just saying like that. Okay. So, while the family's away, the cat will play and the cat gets and ends up getting run down in the highway
Squished in
by
the
a fancy car, got the radio blasting and he's feeling like a star. Sorry.
But here's the thing. He's like, okay, Judd already knows about the pet cemetery, and he's like, let's go climb up and we're going to bury him somewhere different. Even though he had already shown him where the regular pet cemetery
Yeah, here's
was.
the regular pet cemetery that's
This is
still
so
creepy as fuck.
funny. This is so funny because he's like, come on. And it's like this day journey through the wilderness and through, swamp land. It was almost like they're taking the ring to Mordor and climbing. And then there's that funny part where the doctor rolls down the hill and falls. And I couldn't help but laugh because he like
He
busted his
looked
ass.
like a big old fucking goof. Like, how the hell did you
Yeah.
do that? That's impossible. The old man seems to be doing fine, and you're over here fucking
Yeah.
making a fool of yourself. Give me a
That's
break.
hilarious. That's hilarious too, because the old man is like, he's not even that old. He's actually dyeing his hair in the movie gray because his hair was still black, to look older. But he's climbing and climbing, and they're like doing this whole day hike to go take the cat of all things to go get buried up
I know.
there.
I wouldn't hike
And
no fucking day to what? He didn't even know what the fuck was gonna happen. He's just like,
he's
I'm
following
climbing. I
him.
trust
Just this
you.
is the part where it's like, you get what you get, dude, because all of that work, they bury the cat up there. He gets home, he's all disheveled, he's sweaty, he's covered in dirt and all that crap. Then he starts to ask questions. Then, not during the process, not fuck that, I'm not walking up that hill. He did everything. And then he's like, I guess I shouldn't have told you, but let's bury him up there, but I really didn't want the little girl coming home to her dead cat. And then it's like, but why didn't he ask any of those questions before? He went along with it every step of the way and then gets home and says, we did something bad. And
I
then he
know.
has
Yeah.
he doesn't like lying, and he's on the phone with his daughter that night, and it's like it's just like,
Well,
what?
it all makes me upset because he's a doctor. He's a fucking doctor. He should be able to talk to his little girl about life and death. Is it a hard subject? Hell yeah, it's fucking hard. But he's a doctor. He
But this
deals
is
with
why you
life
can
and death
see
every day.
that the relationship between him and his wife is strained because of it, because she's the one who doesn't like talking about death. It's strained because usually in these kind of scenarios where the wife doesn't like the job that the husband has, it's usually because they were a police officer or something like that, something in the line of danger. And not to say that, being a doctor isn't dangerous. It's more of a sad job sometimes, And I think he's more like, she doesn't want to talk about death. That's why she said, oh, you tell her the cat's going to be all right. And anytime when they first saw the cemetery, she didn't want to talk about death because she's like, oh, it's horrible. Why would a child need to learn about that? Why would a child need to know anything about death? And it's obvious that she has like a block about speaking about death, but she's married to a doctor. They've been married
Yeah.
forever. So it's like, you knew he was a doctor. You knew that's part of his job and everything. Yep. And I guess, you know, like that long ago, you really didn't have a choice of what you married.
What you married?
Yeah. Because it's like, don't you have more choice now? I think because it was, you know, I'm like, maybe they didn't date before. I don't know what people were doing in the 80s. Were they just meeting up at church one day and they're like, let's get married tomorrow. And then they're like, oh, I hate your job as a doctor. It's like, now we have a choice. Marry the doctor if you don't. But definitely everybody needs to learn at some point a little bit growing up age appropriate things. And this woman, we're not talking about death.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this little girl doesn't learn it because learn know anything about death because he feels like he has to bury it here. He kind of does. You have to bury your own. That was another big thing. He had to dig and bury his own cat. And then the cat ends up coming back the next day. And it's creepy as fuck because it's like, why is this cat back after I know for a fact it was dead? And now it's acting weird. He smells. His eyes are glowing. He's moving kind of weird. This cat is not the same anymore. And hello, that's when you should have, like, I know I don't advocate for like doing stuff to your cat, but because this is a zombie cat, you know, tap tap.
I thought the cat was cute. I like that he came back.
It was a zombie cat.
It came back.
You don't know what it's gonna do.
It's funny that it returned. It was hanging around with that family. And at one point, it's sleeping next to the wife. And it's just like, he's just doing normal cat shit. He doesn't know he's a zombie cat.
No, but that's the whole point. Zombies don't know they're zombies until they're munching down on someone. And even then, they don't know they're zombies because they're munching down. Otherwise, they wouldn't be munching down on someone.
Okay. And regular cats, though, Thalia, bring their owner's pets like a rat. And the cat killed a rat, and then the guy goes nuts over the rat being in the tub, which is gross, but he's just doing cat shit. He's just doing cat shit, and it's like, he brought you a gift. Shut up. Okay.
We had a neighborhood cat. I remember at one of our houses would always bring us presents, and at first it freaked me out, but then it started being sweet. But here's the thing. I cannot deal with, speaking of not being able to deal with dead stuff, I cannot deal with dead animals. And every time I would open the door and I would see this dead present left at my door and I would see the cat looking on longingly like, do you just love it? Don't you just love it? And I'd be like having to deal with this dead thing in my doorway. I mean, on my porch, I'm like, fuck, 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 fuck. Why does this cat keep doing this to me?
I cannot deal with it. Maybe he was a zombie cat. Maybe cats that bring presents are zombie cats. I don't know. So the little girl even notices that he smells bad. Yeah. You need to do something about it. But the cat came home dirty and with some blood on it. And it was like, why didn't he just give it a bath?
Right? Right? He would have scratched him up, but at least it'll be all clean and looking like, kind of like it was before. Anyways, okay, so now we're getting into the really tragic part. And this happens earlier in the movie, obviously, because that's what the whole movie is. This is not a spoiler alert, because that's what this whole fucking movie was about. The little boy, the cute little adorable little Gage. Again, the parents are not fucking paying attention to what the fuck is going on. And they somehow manage. In this case, I am parent blaming. I'm sorry. In this case, I am. Because somebody already had to save their kid once the first day they were there at their brand new house. And then, hello? What happens now? The poor little baby gets hit by a truck. And then when we go to the funeral, I got so pissed off when his father-in-law, the wife's dad, blames him for it. I'm like, hello? There was two parents there. She didn't fucking do shit about it twice already. So why the fuck are you going? He ends up apologizing later, which I thought was kind of weird. But still, either way, this whole thing.
It was a shitty situation. And they told him to calm down at the funeral, even though the father-in-law was the one with the outburst. And I hate that when people do that. But there was one thing I'm going to bring up about the little girl, too. Because the little girl, when they were playing with the kite, she referred to the little boy as a little shit. And they all thought it was hilarious. And I'm like, why are we laughing at the fact that little girl called the little boy a little shit? And I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up.
Because it's funny hearing a little girl refer to her little brother as a little shit.
I don't know why her voice was real grating. You know? No, I'm not. It's because the little girl, it's like she was almost whispering it. And it was really kind of a creepy thing to say to me, honestly. It was like she was being creepy, but they found it hilarious. So that it was like, oh, okay. So they obviously, you know, when kids say bad words or whatever, we obviously think it's funny. I know I do. I'm like, I'm never like, who taught them that word? Obviously, they learned that word from me. Obviously, the parents were the ones say shit and fuck or whatever. So they're obviously now like in a very distraught state. And Pascal is still visiting his zombie state and telling him things. And he's weird. And at one point, he's like following around the wife too, and she doesn't see or hear him, but Pascal seems to have like an influence on the people around him. Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. It's like kind of like he's a ghost that nobody's seen, but he, you know, is getting people to hear him somehow. So we all know things are going weird, and the neighbor knows that something's going to happen here, and he's warning him, don't do it. So he tells that really creepy story of the dude who came back from the war. So that's another story within the story that I love, because that was just like a really sad and really scary story of the son who returns from war. They had to bury him, and they buried him in the pet cemetery up there above the pet cemetery. Yep. And he comes back as something that's not himself.
No.
And the thing is, he's sentient. He is sentient. Like, he knows what's happening to him. He hates being alive. He doesn't like what's happening to him. They show him just, they're like, they were just letting him wander the neighborhood and everything. So when the whole town comes to get rid of him, he's like, no, Dad, let them do what they have to do. And that's the kind of zombie. Please don't make zombie movies like that. Please,
they are when they know what's up. That's when they're especially.
Yes, creepy. I don't want a zombie who is walking around saying, "You know, I'm sorry that I have to eat you, but I got to eat you." I'd rather they just fucking eat me.
Yeah,
please just chase me down the street trying to eat my brains. Do not walk up yelling brains.
But he ends up doing it anyway. So. The wife and the daughter take off with the parents. That's when the dad apologizes for being an asshole, and they take off, and he's like totally okay with them leaving because he knows what he's going to do. He's going to end up moving the poor little baby boy into that, that cemetery that makes zombie people. And he doesn't care that it's going to be a little zombie to him. He's just like, I need my little boy back. And I get that. But he knows. He heard the story already. He saw his cat already.
Judd knows he's going to do it too and doesn't stop him. That's like, he's aware that, oh no, I fucked up. He like says it. He didn't say it like that. But you know what I mean? I was going to do an impression of him because he has a really cool voice, but I wouldn't be able to do it. But
no. And in my head, whenever I try to do impressions, I can, it's perfect. But when I start to say it, I'm like, now I just sounded like a damn fool. So throughout all this, like you said, Pascal is having his influence, trying to have his influence. Whether people choose to ignore him or not is another thing, because he does come to the dad sometimes, but he seems to be having some kind of influence over the mom somehow. Like you said earlier, whatchamacallit. So we go through this whole thing where he ends up doing his part by burying him up there, and then he just sits there and waits. And again, I get it, but come on, you already saw what's going on. You've been warned. And so you can't really be surprised when shit like this happens. Although here's the thing. When cute little zombie baby comes back, first of all, he still looks absolutely fucking adorable. Not like the other zombies. Why do they have him in that cute ass suit? I know, right? What are you wearing? How do they make that outfit so fucking tiny so that you can wear it like a cute little baby boy? I just always thought he was so cute. Have you seen him as an adult? He's still adorable.
Yes, he still looks cute. It's like, look at his little face. It's a grown man. But he's wearing his little thing. Why did he go to Judd's house?
That's what I was gonna say.
That's the first thing he thinks is as zombie himself, I'm gonna go visit the neighbor. I'm gonna shut him up first.
And exactly.
Yeah. Why? And he's like,
I always wonder that.
Well, how did they teach him to laugh like that? They're like, that's your creepy laugh. That's a creep. No, you need to do a much creepier laugh. And it's like they videotaped him over and over, like, no, do it creepier, do it creep. Like, what was his motivation? Why do you tell an almost 3-year-old? Because I think he was almost, he wasn't older than, like, I think it said like 32 months or some shit. And that's less than 3 years, because I know it's counting months is stupid. But Yeah, so he's not quite 3 years old. And they're like, okay, this is your motivation. You're trying to scare the living shit out of a grown man, okay? You're in a Victorian little suit.
I know, that's it. That's in a Victorian little suit with that cute little baby haircut. Oh, stop it.
And they're like, and your motivation is scare this old dude, okay? And then the guy is, it's so terrifying thinking that there's like a little kid. And he's got a scalpel, like... And
wait, first like, he goes home. Here's the thing.
Yeah, he had to have
He goes
that.
Home first to get that shit from his dad's fucking bag. Like, is that still a thing? Was that the thing in 1989 still that people carried around, doctors carried around their own scalpels? I don't know. Apparently, maybe if you're a rural doctor, I hate saying that word because I always sound stupid when I say it. When you're a rural doctor, the rural juror. I can't do that. Okay, fuck it. Forget it. Anyways, he goes home and he grabs that scalpel and that's his first thought. Gonna grab a scalpel. Gonna go have
gonna
some
cut up
fun.
A neighbor. Gonna slice him up. Why did we turn that to like a country song? Yeah, but he does. He kills it. And it's
but
like
he knows it's coming when he sees the little boy. Like he knows. Like, well, wait, does he know? Right? Does he see him first, or does he sense him first?
I think he hears him. I think he hears him. Because remember, he's doing that creepy laugh and then he's looking for him in the house. The thing is that I could have totally fucked up little Gage zombie. How is he taken by? I know that the element of surprise. Now I'm going to get attacked by Chucky. I just fucking know it. Because look at the size of him. And my 14-year-old doesn't want to get near him when he's sitting in my desk.
Same size as little baby zombie boy over there. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. If you see those tiny shoes just walking around and shit, I think I could fuck him up. I think I could fuck him up. You know, I'm like, I wouldn't have got. I could
the baby or Chucky. What are we talking about here?
Both. Well, Chucky's my friend, so Chucky would never come for me. So we're like this, you know. So anyway, he
slices and dices. Yes.
He's smart. He's like, I got to take out his Achilles tendon first so he can't walk. And then I'm going to pounce on him and slice his throat. And he gets him. But
he slices his throat pretty fucking good, like he's done it before. Like, dude, what kind of YouTube videos were you watching or whatever to learn how to do that shit? Because he... Whack, and he's dead. He whacked him.
Oh, that's been whacked. No, he got pet cemeteried.
Yeah, there you go. You just got pet cemeteried. Whack. And, I still had to add the whack. I couldn't help it.
He's waiting there. He's waiting there, though. And the mom is with the family, and they're like, oh, I love that they're like, oh, yeah, he needs you because he's not answering the phone. Something's going on. But they left in the first place. That's the thing. It's like they left him, but then they're worried about him. So the wife is heading back. Because she knows something's up. And the wife gets back before the dad ever wakes up. Like, so she makes it back to the house and she gets gaged.
So she gets pet cemetery too. You just been pet cemetery. Gage style.
And he has a plan. The doctor's like, I'm going to put them to sleep. Because I think that's what Judd had said, like you have to put them back to sleep, or if something bad happens, you got
to
return them back.
You return them, I guess, basically to where they were before. But I want to go back real quick because you had mentioned Pascal having this influence on people. I want to go back to when she was trying to find her way home, and she was trying to rent a car, and that was a rental car place, right? And there was nothing available, and then Pascal had his influence over the person because he knew. First of all, how did he know about that car too, though? I mean, like, was he reading her shit or whatever?
Dude, when you die, you learn everything.
Oh, I guess that's it. He's like, what about that blah, 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 blah with the blah, blah, blah? Because there was something wrong with the car. But they're like, okay, but this is what's wrong with it. You know, and they share that. So when she's driving it, it just goes kaput. And the guys, and he's like, the powers or the whatever is trying to keep you from going. Because I was thinking that, like, for a little bit, I'm like, wouldn't he have seen that? But maybe he did, but still he's trying to get her closer to home because he said that the powers were trying to keep her from or the evil force was trying to keep her from going home so that everything bad that's about to happen continues to happen. And then she ends up getting a trucker, ends up taking her the rest of the way home. But I wanted to comment on the trucker. The trucker seemed creepy to me. She just got in the truck all like, dun, 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 I'm going to get in. Like she couldn't wait for another truck. Yeah,
that's what you did. You don't have a choice. Just like you don't have a choice in marrying the doctor. You don't have a choice in being picked up by a creepy trucker. That's how it works in 1989.
He didn't have a choice of marrying the doctor. That's so funny. Or the doctor didn't have a choice in marrying her, but whatever. So she finally gets home. And by that point, like we said, the neighbor had gotten pet cemeteried. And she goes to the house. She's at her house, right, when this happens?
I can't remember. This is the confusion that I have, because I know that the dad comes to the house to find Gage, and I'm like, is he in his own house or is he in the neighbor's? Because remember, like, shit started getting rotten, like the walls and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I was a little and confused so, here. It's probably not as confusing as I'm making it, but I always seem confused where this happened. But she does come home and she sees him or she hears him. I can't remember whether she saw or heard him. But either way, she now knows that her little baby boy's there. But of course, zombie boy's got to be a zombie boy and he can't help it. It's like, I'd like to think that he was thinking, I'm going to bring you over to me so that I can make you like me and you can be my mommy forever. That's my thinking.
Zombie
rather than
mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than just, I'm going to kill you, mom, because I hate you. And I was already getting into my teenage years. And why don't you just let me live my life? And, you know, I'd rather think it's more like he wants a zombie mom forever than being, you know, a little teenager, you know, with bad, I don't know.
This is the funny thing to me. So the doctor, the dad, gets three syringes because he gets a phone call from Gage, and it's not coming from inside the house. He's like, I've been playing with Judd and mommy. So he's like, oh shit, I fucked up, right? So he has the three syringes. He catches Church along the way, and it's like, that's a real cat, man. It's interesting. I think it said it had like seven cats that play Church in the movie, and each one was trained to do a specific task. So like when one hisses, one whatever. And this one, Mary Lambert had said the most difficult thing to get the cats to do was this part, eating the pork chop, because the doctor gives him a pork chop to kind of distract him. And then he does a little scruff of the neck thing so he can give him the shot. Why did that look like a real shot? It looked really pointy. And so he puts him to sleep, and then he goes and finds his neighbor first, Judd. And he's been fucked up. Like that looked good, didn't it? Right? That makeup. He's missing like the bottom part of his jaw. He's obviously dead. And he covers him up like, okay, we're done with him. But this is funny to me. He's like, fuck Gage. I'm putting him back down. And decides he's going to keep the mom. He's like, it's because she's more fresh or because she just died. Maybe
she just died.
Better.
Exactly. Exactly.
But when he gives up completely on Gage.
He puts the little boy down. But this is the funny part, because obviously this is a movie about a zombie kid. It's not real. But the funny part is when he gets him and he injects him, the little boy's like, no fair, no fair. The way he talks. Like, I don't want to play with you anymore. Whatever he says, I just thought it was so hilarious.
It's hilarious and cute and scary all at the same time.
Yeah.
I think they filmed this in, and then they reversed it when the little boy falls backwards. I think that it started off with him sitting on the floor and then walking towards him, and then they reversed it, because him walking slowly backwards and then falling was so creepy, especially because he still has his baby voice saying what he's saying. And the father's like, okay, on to the mom. He burns down the house, right? Does he burn it down? Am I making that up? So I've watched way too movies, too many movies recently. Yeah, he did burn it down. And then he picks up her body. He's going to go take it, because the day long hike is totally worth it for the mom. And I hope my husband loves me enough to do that.
I'll be the little Pascal in his ear telling him, don't do it. Don't fucking do it.
I will haunt you. So he does it. And then she comes back. And I think that the makeup, I love the makeup in this one. I had watched this one with my youngest and they were like, oh, that looks so real and that looks so creepy. And then they were talking about practical effects. And I said, this is my child. This is my child. Dahlia, we're always talking about practical effects. They hold up better, you know, I think in these older movies, I can really appreciate. She looked so gross. She looked so gross. And he was so sad. He wants his wife back. And she comes back and he knows what she is and lets himself be taken by her. And that's why I'm like, why couldn't they have just been a zombie family?
Well, so who would bury him? Would he be able to get across that you have to take me? I'd be like, fuck that shit. I'm not walking across all that shit day long,
Dahlia,
carrying your dumbass body the whole fucking way just to do it.
I just realized, though, nobody was going to take him to the cemetery.
Yep.
So he was just giving himself to her and then setting her loose on humanity.
Exactly.
That's messed up. That's messed up. Is way deeper
and
than
to
I
this
thought.
Day, she's out there still somewhere
out
in
there,
Bangor,
just,
Maine.
Just hiding in the bushes, jumping out and eating your face.
Just an
that
occasional
kiss
face
that
here
he
and
gives
there.
Her while her eye is oozing. Oh my God, it's just gag worthy. It's oozing, Dahlia. Oh God, I'm going to gag.
Okay. So a couple of quick things of trivia. Bruce Campbell was the first choice for the role of Lewis Creed, and I can totally see that. Can you? I could see how that could have been a first choice. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned the twin actresses. Mm-hmm. Another one I wanted to read. Oh, yeah. Stephen King was present on location for most of the shooting of the film. It was shot only about 20 minutes away from his home in Bangor, Maine, which we went to.
We
remember?
Visited. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We went and visited. Let's see. Oh, remember the sound of the loon in the cemetery? We had these weird, like, little, when they first went there and there was like all this wind rustling and then we heard this loud sound. That weird sound was attributed to a loon. And I always forget that. I always want to look up and hear what a loon actually sounds like, because I don't believe that it would have sounded like a loon. And he was supposed to believe that. Of course he didn't believe it, but still.
Mm-hmm.
The original cut of the film delivered to Paramount's executives was judged to be too long, so excess footage had to be removed. They also decided that the closing scene was too tame, and at their request, it was reshot to be more graphic, which is kind of funny because usually it's the reverse. It's too graphic and they turn it around and make it more tame, but not in this case. They did it so that it was more graphic.
I liked it. Good choice.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to read through a couple of these real quick.
Well, George Romero was supposed to be the original director for the film, but he was working on Monkey Shines. So he had to drop out of it. And that's how Mary Lambert came onto the scene.
And I think she did a great job, obviously. But yeah, it's funny how little things like that happen, like little things here and there make it so that you can show that, yeah, you did. You are perfectly capable, just as George Romero, to do a fantastic job in this movie. And I like this. I don't think I've seen the remake. Have you?
The remake? No, I have not seen the remake at all. Hmm. Is it worth it? I don't know. I might as well just watch it.
I think I might. I think I may just go ahead and watch it.
Yeah, just
because I don't think I have.
I know that there's some key differences that they did just to switch it up to just kind of like make it a little different, but I haven't watched it. And I did watch Pet Sematary 2.
Oh my God.
That's
one of my favorite movies.
Yes.
It has Edward Furlong.
I think I watched it first. I don't know why. I always kind of, you know, because depending on your age is which one you watch, and then you go back to find the original. And back then, back in the olden days, you know, you'd watch a new movie, and maybe if you weren't old enough to see the original, then you have to go rent it. So I think I watched the second one before the first one. And I love that. Oh my gosh, why is that actor's name slipping my mind? The father in it that's real scary. He gave me nightmares for the longest time.
Oh, yes. The stepdad. Yes.
He was so scary to me.
He was horrible. So, he did such a good job in that movie.
And so that one has also a really great creepy vibe too. And they did it different. And it was really good. I thought, well, you know, it's fine. It's my opinion. It's your opinion. So we're right.
You're right. Miko Hughes, who played Gage, was only 31 to 33 months old during production, which I think she did a fantastic job of casting that role because, he did it so perfectly. Only one kid did that. I wouldn't believe that. I would think that was because they usually do twins. Again, you were correct. Fred Gwynn's hair was actually black, so he had to dye it white on a regular basis for that role, which is really fucking cool. Oh, one of my dogs woke up. And
there is couple of references to Cujo in the movie as well. Yes, which is there something is. I always remember. I always remember that because it's referenced. And then there's also a movie poster, or not, it's not a movie poster, it's a rabies poster hung in the hospital when Pascal is brought in and with a picture of Cujo on it. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it is. It is cool to whatchamacallit, to make those little references, those little. Sorry, I had to clear my throat there. Every time I mute myself, I think people just think that we're like off air, even though it's like.
Well, I just thought I muted it and I burped. So y'all are going to hear that. Oh,
no. I can't edit that out.
I don't know where it is. It was in there somewhere. I was like, oh, shit. But then I didn't want to interrupt because you were talking. So there's going to be a burp.
Okay. So that was our movie. And like we mentioned earlier, we did have the opportunity to go to Bangor, Maine, and we got to see Stephen King's home, which he doesn't live in at anymore. It's more of a what did the guy say, call it? It's not like, it's not a museum because you can't go into it. It's more like an estate where they do business administrative shit out of it for, I guess, the whole Stephen King estate. But anyways, it's still a beautiful, fucking beautiful home, and all the homes around it are beautiful. So it's kind of interesting when you see his. It is a standout home, but when you see it amongst the other homes, you still see that it fits. It fits nicely in that neighborhood where it was at. We got to take a tour of the whole town and see where the inspiration was for different stories and stuff like
that. You catch so many names, street names, businesses, and you can pull them out from all the books, and it's really neat. The cemetery that we even took a cemetery tour, which is something that Dalia loves to do, including dragging me out in the middle of the night in New Mexico without telling me we're going to walk into a cemetery that has no lights. But that's cool. It's cool. I survived. I'm here.
What cemetery did I drag you though to? It's not just to go
see Billy the Kid. Well, exactly. I mean, at the time, I'm like, what are we doing here, dude? You had to drive so far down streets that had no lights.
No lights, no, and the pavement was all, you know, sketchy, and there was no lines on the road. But I had to take her. I didn't tell her. I just went off road, and I just decided to just show her. It wasn't so far out of the way, but it was out of the way to take her there.
It's mostly because it was home. In the dark. But we did get to visit this cemetery in the light, which I appreciate.
And this cemetery is called Mount Hope Cemetery. And the movie did have, I believe it was two scenes there. And so I'm about to tell you a little bit about Mount Hope Cemetery, the real cemetery, which is located in Bangor, Maine. So I found this information from bangorinfo.com. And I'll put a link in the bio so you can read it more about the town or the city in general. So inspired by Mount Auburn Cemetery in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Bangor's Mount Hope Cemetery is the second oldest garden cemetery in the United States. I think you might remember our tour guide telling us that, the whole garden cemetery thing. Nearly 30,000 people are buried on the cemetery's 264 acres, including the famous, such as former Vice President Hannibal Hamlin, and the infamous, such as Public Enemy Number One, Al Brady. In spring 1834, the Bangor Horticultural Society formed to acquire 100 acres of land on the city's east side near Trent Falls. 3 years earlier, Mount Auburn Cemetery had become the first garden cemetery in the nation. With cities' populations increasing, land for cemeteries had become scarce within city limits. Small cemeteries were scattered throughout neighborhoods and business districts, and Bangor had cemeteries on Thomas Hill, Oak Street, and Hammond Street. To provide a larger, more peaceful place to honor the dead, the Bangor Horticultural Society sought to follow Mount Auburn's lead in creating a cemetery that would not only pay homage to the dead, but to the living, with trees, shrubs, plants, and ponds laid out to provide a suitable, attractive, and tranquil place for quiet reflection. The society folded in September of 1834 after never formally meeting, however. Instead, a group of prominent residents established the Mount Hope Cemetery Corporation that month. The corporation convinced Joseph Treat to sell 100 acres of land below the falls that bear his name as the Bangor-Vesey town line for $3,050. And I forgot to look up how much that is today. Shit. With Treat getting another $700 in the corporation's shares. Upon buying the land, the corporation hired architect Charles G. Bryant to design the cemetery with two sections, one for burials and the other for horticulture. The cemetery's board of trustees had reservations, though, of whether a section of land on the State Street would also be suited for burials. The land in that area of the cemetery at the foot of what would become known as Cemetery Hill was swampy around a pond. At first, the trustees tried to drain the pond, but their efforts failed. Today, Office Pond is one of the cemetery's natural attractions, an appropriate complement to the trustees' desire to keep to create a special place in the city. After 2 years of planning and landscaping, Mount Home Cemetery was consecrated on July 21st, 1836. The Reverend Frederick H. Hedge, representing the Unitarian Church, and the Reverend Swan L. Pomeroy and John Maltby, representing the Congregational Church, presided along with then Mayor Edward Kent. Samuel Call, who had died on July 9th, 1836, was the first person buried there. Atop Cemetery Hill overlooking, and I'm going to fuck up this pronunciation, the Penobscot River, a 10-foot obelisk marks his grave, and the first lots cost $30. Again, I had told myself to look up how much these prices are today, but wow, it's just hearing these old-timey numbers. Over the years, the cemetery's trustees bought more land to accommodate the ground's popularity. Mount Hope is greatly improving and will one day be one of the most beautiful cemeteries in the country, Bangor probate Judge John Edward Godfrey wrote in his journal after attending a Memorial Day service at the cemetery in 1873.
Yeah, and it is really, really beautiful. Wouldn't you like to just, I love a beautiful resting space and the fact that it's been so well taken care of.
That's why I like going to cemeteries, because there's so much history, and this, like, this shows that there's I have a little bit more to read, but I like seeing the history. I'm walking around. I mean, yeah, it is depressing when, you know, if your family's there, but when you see a one that's like this old, you can walk around and you get a sense of the history of the place, a sense of history of our country or whatever country, because I've been to cemeteries in different countries before too. You get an idea of what's going on in that space. Like when we walked around Billy the Kid's, that very small, it's a very small cemetery, but you walk around visiting the other grave sites in that little area, you get a feel for the other families that are, you know, that were living in that area at the time. But speaking of notable, in addition to having some of the oldest and finest war memorials in the nation, Mount Hope is also the final resting place for some of Bangor's, the state's, and even the nation's most famous and infamous characters. Hannibal Hamlin, who served as Abraham Lincoln's first vice president, is buried in the Riverview Lawn Cemetery, Riverview section of the cemetery on the grounds, State Street side. A Paris Hill, Maine native and a lawyer for the town of Hamden, Hamlin served in the Maine legislature. I'm having all sorts of tongue twisters here. So buried alongside Hamlin are his children, Sarah and Charles. They witnessed Lincoln's assassination, unfortunately, at Ford's Theater. And the most infamous character to claim Mount Hope as his final resting place is gangster Al Brady. After the FBI killed John Dillinger, Brady claimed the title of public enemy number one when he and his gang of thugs, I love that the way he describes them, gang of thugs, went on a crime and killing spree that led them from the Midwest to what they thought was the backwoods of Maine in 1937. Brady and his gang thought they could lie low and be safe while the FBI and other law enforcement officials scoured the rest of the Northeast for them after they escaped from prison and killed a police officer. Brady and his men were wrong about Maine, though. Brady and another of his men were killed in a firefight in the middle of Central Street in downtown Bangor on October 12, 1937. So Brady's family said it could not afford to bury him, so the federal government and Bangor buried Brady's body in an unmarked grave in Mount Hope's newer section across Mount Hope Avenue. Today, although public mausoleums enjoy some popularity in large urban areas, the concept has not quite caught on in Mount Hope. In 1986, the cemetery opened a public mausoleum on the east end of the grounds, but it has yet to reach capacity. Meanwhile, the cemetery has begun to design and landscape additional plots for burials on the northern side. In 1989, the cemetery made its motion picture debut in Stephen King's Pet Sematary for two scenes. Shot from September 27th through the 29th, 1988, the scenes take place on the State Street side of Cemetery Hill. The film crew had to wait until 2 a.m. to get the right moonlight for a shot of the lead character digging up his son's body. And the cemetery was added to the National Register of Historical Places in December 1974. And having seen it with our own eyes, I thought this was a beautiful cemetery. And I was astounded because this area does not seem like it's especially huge, but the cemetery was sprawling, I thought.
It is. And remember, Stephen King was in the movie because he was the one, officiating the funeral.
He was officiating.
A priest? He was a minister? Something. But it was
minister.
Him.
I tend to think minister. I don't know nothing about no religion.
And I see him, I want to laugh just because every time I think of him and his original, when he does his little cameos, that I always think of him in that green grass segment of Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh my God. I was just thinking of the same thing. Oh my God. He's such a goofball. And of course he was high as a fucking kite throughout that whole thing too. So that's just why he's bizarre. Such a goofball
that's
in
the,
that.
That's the face that I could see. And so, it's a great way to stay in shape.
All right, Anne. Well, thank you for letting me share a little bit about Tales from the Dark Side.
It was Creepshow.
Oh, I did hear you say Tales from the Dark Side. Oh, Tales from the Dark Side is good too, though, man. That's another great series there.
So that was really interesting because it was beautiful.
Did you hear my dog? Could you hear that? It was was my dog, man. Full on.
Oh, right.
I love
it. What if it was you? You fell asleep listening to me. That would be
so
sad.
Oh my God. Wouldn't that be so rude if I did that? There would have to be something really wrong with me. And you would have to really check in on me if I fell asleep while you were while we were doing something. Like, that's not me. You know me. I cannot nap. I cannot sleep on a fucking plane. I can't sleep on a plane,
a train, a bus. Thalia knows now. I will sleep through an airplane taking off.
Exactly. You sleep before it takes off. How do you fucking do that? I'm like, God damn,
I really like sleeping. If I want to sleep, I tell myself, go the fuck to sleep because I am so uncomfortable in those places. So the best thing I can do is just go to bed. I even do it in short car rides.
I'm jealous. I love it.
We got 20 minutes. I'm shutting my eyes.
I wish I could do that. I was trying to do that last night when I went in. We went to go see Adam Sandler. And at first it was only going to be 25 minutes going home because it was almost midnight, and I was just it's going to be so breezy going home because nobody's on the road, except that there was construction on the road and it went down to one lane and it took us over an hour to get home. So I got home well past midnight. And the whole time I was thinking, if I could just close my eyes and go to sleep, we'd be home. If I could just close my eyes and go to sleep, we'd be home.
Oh, that's so sad.
I couldn't fucking nap. Oh, I hate
I always think that. Whenever I visited you and we have a drive home, I always think it's going to be 20 minutes. It's always a fucking hour. It's always a fucking hour. How is it an hour in just one town? I just don't get it. A city, it's big, it's huge, whatever. Anyway.
All right. So if you want to get a hold of us and email us or hit us up on the socials, Alma, where can people find us?
Head on over to nightmaremoviepodcast.com. Our Instagram is at nightmaremoviepodcast. Our Twitter is at nightmareon5th. That's nightmareon5th. We have horror movie blog over on horrormovieblog.com. And our Instagram for that is at horrormovieblog. We got lots of great shit to read over there.
We have lots of good shit on there right now. Plus, we have lots of good shit coming because we are going to South by Southwest. Yay. So we're gonna have a lot more cool shit on there. So if you haven't checked it out yet, go and start catching up, and then make sure that you subscribe to our newsletter. That way you can see all the cool stuff we have coming out for South by Southwest. And also, If you are able, we would love it if you would go to our website as Alma said, nightmaremoviepodcast.com. All the links are in our bio. So, I mean, in this show notes, so that you can hopefully leave us a review. If you're able, just go to the top, click on the link that says reviews, and you can leave us one on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or on our website or all three. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/nightmaremoviepodcast, if you are able to support us monetarily through a membership or a one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/nightmarepod. However, I know we share all that information, but the truth is, however you decide to support us, listening, sharing us with your friends, whatever, we appreciate every single moment that you guys give us. We really are grateful for that. Thank you. I guess that's it though, right, Alma? Is that all the good stuff? Okay, all right.
Yes.
Until next time,
thank
everybody.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast. If you like what you heard, consider hitting that follow button and sharing us with others. We also love reviews if that's your thing. And of course, you can always subscribe to our Patreon and on your favorite podcast platform like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Whatever way you choose to support us, whether it's listening, sharing, or subscribing, we are truly grateful. Thank you so much.